Dr. Willie Soon of the Harvard-Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory has reviewed Mercury research for the Center for Science and Public Policy. His presentation is titled, "The Science of Mercury Behind the Headlines: Fiction, Misunderstanding, and Reality."
My talk today, it's about the science of Mercury. And let me just explain what I'll do today. I'm just going to pick some recent headlines that you hear on the news concerning issues of mercury. Actually, it's about metal mercury, which is a specific form of mercury, which is the biologically toxic form of mercury, and fish. And then I will try to go around explaining some of these headlines. And, of course, the title of my talk is that it's about fiction, misunderstanding, and reality. I really leave it to you to decide whether what I say makes any sense or not. Well, some may complain that fiction, misunderstanding really don't have much of a choice. But this is really a very accurate title. And I've looked into this issue quite carefully and reached such conclusion. What you have mostly seen around the news and all the headlines recently are mostly fiction and misunderstanding. And I'm here just trying to provide you some sort of reality check. And without further ado, let me get started. And we will go over five of these headlines. Don't bother to read it now. A quick disclaimer before I start. Since most of you are familiar with my previous talks, and I often talk about global warming and all that, so this is partly a disclaimer that we'll be talking about fish, as I say. We'll be talking about mercury and specific form of mercury, which is called metal mercury, which is ultimately the biologically toxic form of mercury. And actually, ultimately, there's a bit of punchline behind this. It's not really about fish as it relates to the U.S. population later. We'll see it will be involving some sort of marine mammals. So let's start with the very first headline. This is coming from very well-known NGOs, which is the Natural Resource Defense Council, as if nature needs defending from people like that. And then from MoveOn.org, which is a George Soros foundation-funded foundation. And here the claim is that the Bush administration is allowing coal-fired power plants to put more mercury into the air where it rains down on lakes and ocean and is swallowed by fish and could wind up in your plate. It is extremely clear that I can assure you, and I'll show you the results, that these are mostly fictions and mostly a very convenient ploy on their part to try to tell you that the mercury that ended up in our fish can only come from anthropogenic sources, can only come from specifically here, the coal-fired power plant. Okay, and I'll rest assured that this is not even close to the full story. And here is the full story. The first facts that one has to remember very clearly, it is extremely clear that the U.S. man-made power mercury emissions, especially from power plant, is no more than 1%. Okay? This number can actually vary quite a bit still, okay? But it's all towards lower end, okay? But it depends on what kind of accounting that you are doing. I'm mainly picking a standard what of people agree upon that natural sources from ocean and volcanoes can account for some 39% of all the annual mercury emission to the atmosphere. And then a big factor is actually biomass burning, up to some 16%. And then a large majority of mercury that is known to be emitted to the atmosphere come from actually other man-made sources, non-US man-made sources, particularly China and the top seven European emitters, India, Australia, okay, Australia and Zaria, okay? And so that's the basic bottom line. The US account for only 1% or maybe at most 3%, including all other sources of anthropogenic emissions, that will be only 3% of the rest of the world. And then what they are talking about is that this 3% is the one that is causing all the problem, according to that message. And here's another perspective. Okay, this is actually a very hard to get numbers, but it's one of the most accurate that one can find in terms of the anthropogenic mercury emissions over, let's say, the decade or so, from 1990 to 2000. And one can clearly see that the U.S. sources, the total, all the anthropogenic sources are actually under a decreasing trend, okay? And this decreasing trend is primarily due to actually a much more decreased use of emission from waste incinerator and so on. So over this 10-year period, the U.S. has decreased by some 70 tons or so, okay, and leading to about 100 tons or so today. And the U.S. power plant is no more than 40 to 50 tons per year now. And then at the same time, one can see that places like China and even Africa itself are rapidly increasing in terms of its mercury emission output, mainly, of course, due to use of a very dirty coal, which is indeed true that contain some level of mercury. But then I also want to assure you, even this amount of emission from them is not necessarily going to tell you that we'll be facing some sort of public health crisis from eating the fish that is that we from the wide variety of fish from the world ocean. And the point is that the ocean itself is already containing quite a lot of mercury that hasn't been converted to metamercury. And I'll explain why that is completely not possible, even from sources like China and India. Here is another very typical sort of literature confusion that one can see. Here I'm just picking one recent example from the former EPA Administrator Mike Leavitt in his presentation, where he would actually tell people that the volcanic emission can only be 100 tons per year or so. Unfortunately, this is a very, very clear underestimate, because the most accurate and the better accounting of work done by a group of chemists and volcanologists from University of Cambridge is giving us a number of the order of 700 tons or so. And the high end, as I'll show you, can be as high as 4,000 tons. Okay? And the error in basically the reference of 100 tons or so by even our US EPA's administrator that shows that very clear underestimate of volcanic output of about 100 tons or so is simply that they just account for some sort of continuously emitting volcanic sources, whereas they don't account for all this large eruption and all these other small sporadic emission sources. So indeed, it is very clear that they want to always, you know, overplay the anthropogenic emissions and then always underplay the natural sources, which is very unfortunate, because you don't really get the full picture. If one started to account for this very high end of natural sources, the U.S. emission power plant can actually get smaller and smaller. It depends on, of course, how much total mercury is emitted per year, what kind of accounting one is doing. So this is the best of our number today, and I really think that the number is extremely robust, meaning that the U.S., from whatever sources, the anthropogenic emission sources, is extremely small. Okay, and from that perspective, it's really important to remember that that actually it's not the emission that is really important. The question to ask is really how much of the mercury actually rained down or actually through dry deposition go down onto the surface of the United States continent, for example. And here actually is the modeling results, but this is the best way we know how to handle such questions. Okay, and actually, on average, one thing that the U.S. emitted, like you say, like you can see, the number anthropogenic sources is of the order of about 100 tons per year, but the average actually deposition per year is of the order of 180 tons per year. So we're actually taking in much, much more than what we actually could emit from man-made sources. And this is just simply a map summarizing for you about actually the non-U.S. sources, including the pollution from China, India, and all these other places, and also locally natural emitted emitting sources. And this map actually, on average, is telling you that over 70% of the deposition, actual deposition coming down onto the U.S. surface, come from sources that is not related to U.S. own emission. Okay, and then if you want really go deeper into the statistic that is more meaningful, is that one can only find 1% of the U.S. area that has actually more than 80% of the emission coming from our own sources. So that really means that local pollution itself is not going to be able to pollute our own soil and water and air. Here's another way to look at this picture. Remember, I tried to tell you that the very misleading headlines by those MoveOn.org and NRDC is indeed that they're trying to tell you that, wow, the only way we can get this mercury is actually come from the human emission sources. And they never want to ask the question, is that how much is the mercury is already there, okay? This particular new study actually addressed that question. And their conclusion is that the hypothesis that most of this mercury in Illinois, for example, and the U.S. soil is of anthropogenic origin is totally rejected. And let me give you, quantify for you some of this, how they go about doing this. They essentially go to different places in Illinois and pick up the soil and then analyze how high concentration is mercury is there. And then they also have measurements of how much the deposition is per year at the current rate. And then they ask themselves, how long would it take with the current rate to try to populate the concentration of mercury at the soil right now? For example, the answer for Illinois is that it would take 9,000 years with the current atmospheric deposition. So what does that tell you? That tells you that the mercury that is already there in the soils belongs there and was there long, long time ago. The only issue is that why is it that they keep insisting that only the anthropogenic sources that is currently emitted could be turned into the metal mercury? I'll explain a little bit more about the biochemistry and bioconversion process of metal mercury in a minute. And then for the U.S., for example, the whole U.S. as a whole, on average, it would take about 14,000 years. So this is why this as a scientific studies, I think this paper extremely well illustrated that this whole notion that you can only get the mercury coming from the power plant sources is totally flawed. Okay? Simply because that they haven't even want to account for how much of the mercury is already there in the ocean or in the soil itself. Here the test is for the soil itself. By the way, the ocean itself has some order of 100 millions or so mercury already in there, in the upper, maybe top 1 kilometers of the water. Okay, and the whole business here is actually that how does that raw mercury, which in chemical form is just Hg or some ionic form, Hg2 plus or Hg plus, that how come those things are not being converted so easily into this biologically toxic form of mercury called metalmercury? Okay? And the point is that the process is highly limited by so many other processes that it is really way beyond human control. This is why it's a very, very misleading thing to say that while we will be able to cut the power plant emission, and then we will get some sort of, somehow by magic, that the amount of mercury that ended up in a fish will get reduced and somehow will be safer in that way. So this is why the whole notion is completely from the start, from that kind of perspective, is totally wrong. Okay? And, well, here is one of the standard technique. I thought is very typical to show you that what all these environmentalists are actually doing. For example, in this particular report called Cycle of Harm by National Wildlife Federation, can you believe that they're actually using that one statistical data outliers to make statement like this? The whole report is based on basically a collection of all the different states, any data that they can get, the atmospheric deposition data that they can get, but based on those kind of statistical outliers, okay, to make that claim that, oh, now the rain that is coming down on Maryland actually is hurting us. Okay, so that's why this is called the Mercury in the Rain Project by the National Wildlife Federation. And actually, for this particular case at Maryland, I actually spoke to the chief author itself, Professor Robert Mason from there. Unfortunately, I mean, he only willing to admit to me that he's extremely angry about this, which I have the email to prove that. But I pressed him to actually, I think this is hurting science itself. Why don't you speak out and then tell this National Wildlife Federation people that they're doing the wrong thing? I mean, they couldn't possibly be using such a one single outlier to make that kind of statement. And in fact, it's not only one, this is only one example. The whole report is talking about all the different states, okay? And it's highly, highly misleading coming from people like that, and it's very, very damaging. And now I want to come to the very key chart that I wanted to show here. It's a bit complicated here. Don't try to read too much. But my whole point here is that the metal mercury production does not depend on the amount of elemental mercury that you have in the system. Okay. Here is a real clear example that I can show you. It's based on a recent data coming from San Pablo Bay, somewhere around the San Francisco Bay area. And the scientists here actually go to the sediment there from four different locations. Okay. They collected the sediment, and then they started to analyze two things, two variables. The first variable is the total amount of concentration of mercury, the raw mercury, what I call the raw material available, which is labeled HGT by the blue bar, for all different locations. Three of them are open water region. The fourth one is the marshland area. And as you can see, the total amount of mercury, amount of materials that you have available for conversion is more or less the same for all four locations. Okay? And basically, most probably because they are due to the same geological condition, they are really not far different from each other. Okay? And then, but when you started to measure the metal mercury, Again, the biological toxic form of mercury in it, you can clearly see the open region are really way, way, way below compared to the marsh area. What does that tell you? The conversion process of this depends on the biology, the chemistry, the sunlight, and all the other factors. But it has nothing to do with the amount of raw material you have. Can everybody see that? This is actually the main, very, very misleading point. If you understand this chart, I think it will do a lot of good to your understanding to the rest of all these different arguments that they try to deceive you with. Okay? And in fact, this author itself claimed that, make the very clear statement that one ought to be really, really careful with a lot of this wetland reclamation process project. If one really want to reclaim all this wetland, if you are concerned about formation of metamercury, this could be a real, real problem. Okay? And of course, the problem is that when the different rivers will bring this, spread this metamercury further from the main source there. This chart is actually just trying to give you a hint of how complicated the whole process is. It will involve process from the air, from the water, which is a different type of deposition, and all the air chemistry involved, coming down to all these different symbols. H nu will be the sunlight, the food web process, and then amount of particulates. And then even very clearly is that, as you know, the main way of converting this raw amount of mercury to metamercury is actually through a sulfate-reducing bacteria. Okay, this is why sulfur is also, amount of sulfur in the system is also one of the factors. Okay, and now I want to show you a list of my Forrest Gump way of cooking shrimp, but here a way of making metamercury. And always remember that when you talk about metamercury, you always, this chemical is not stable all by itself, even in a human blood. I mean, this thing decay in a half-life, have a half-life, which means it reduced by half. If 100%, it reduced by half in about 2 months or so. Okay, 60 days to 80 days, roughly. Okay, and here is a whole list. Maybe I'll just quickly go over because it's really, really important. There's so much misunderstanding about this. This is why I think it's worth talking about this. But anyway, the point is that it will depend on sunlight. It will depend on little things like the species of the zooplankton itself. It will depend on how much organic matter you have. How deep is the basement in the lake, for example. Visible sunlight, UV sunlight. One of the most surprising scientific discovery in a lot of ways is basically the findings that if we were to leave this under dark area, you know, the amount of water, and then measure the amount of metamercury in it, and then you expose it to sunlight, you measure later, you much reduce. Because the sunlight destroyed this particular bond, actually. That was really surprising. And this was roughly discovered about 96 or so. And then one particular example, for formation of metamercury in actually one of the lake in Sweden, for example, after accounting for 48 environmental factors, for example, and they still can only account for 60% of the variance of this production in terms of the metamercury. It shows you how complicated the whole thing is. But one thing you can be rest assured, as I give you the clear example from San Pablo Bay, is that it does not depend on the amount of raw material you have. The best, even better example is actually it's about the amount of mercury you already have in the ocean itself. You know, you just never have a case. Sure, you have an occasional spike of, you can historically see some high level of metamercury in tuna and all those other fishes. But you really clearly see that there was no widespread historical poisoning and all that effects that people are claiming. So now let me move on to the second headline. This second headline is also highly, highly misleading. Again, come from the same group. It's saying that we learned only this week that tuna and many other fish can contain harmful level of toxic mercury. And here we can just cut to the chase and show you the real data. The real data, this is of course, they know that this data exists, and unfortunately they don't tell you, of course. And so my job is only to look into the literature and point to you what is happening here. And this is a study, fairly recent. It's led by Professor Francois Morel from Princeton, who with a graduate student, Krapel. And they actually knew of one study that has existed in 1971, done in Wisconsin, very careful study, measuring yellowfin tuna off some specific area in Hawaii, where here is actually the distribution of mercury value, okay? And then showing the frequency distribution with the mean of the order of 0.2, as you can see here, a sample of yellowfin tuna caught in 1971. And then they repeated the study for in this report. In 1998, they go to the same area, same region, caught the same size of fish. And by the way, this whole amount of the amount of mercury in the fish actually depends on how old is the fish and what size is the fish. And they pick a very almost exact sort of sample just to make sure you don't have any sample bias. So look at the quality of this data. And they're actually showing that there is no increase. Whereas one ought to expect, okay, from the pollution from China and Asia and all those places, one to expect of 10 to 30% increase in the level of mercury in this tuna. So obviously, you can see that studies like that are not being promoted, clearly, and because it's just against their simple statements. Here's another example. Here's a much more, I would say, lesser quality of a data, but still data nevertheless. And here, what is plotted here is virus type of virus tuna level of mercury, mercury in tuna, the concentration of mercury in tuna. Here is one from Smithsonian Museum. With the average, there's only about 7 samples here. So one can see that what is plotted is the mean value here, the median value of the order of 0.4. Okay? And then I just stretch the arrow out to show you the highest point and the lowest point. Okay? And then one can see another sample that is caught in 71 or 72 are slightly lower than this. Okay? And immediately, this is actually based on the study that's done in 73, where the author immediately concluded that there is just not a possibility that this whole changes is caused by human sources. Okay? And then these are more recent data coming from National Marine Fisheries Services, done in 78, some mean level of that, and then FDA's measurements and even EPA's own remeasurements for quite a lot of samples, some few hundreds, where they complain that the FDA are being biased, but then their value is more or less the same like FDA. Okay? And then, by the way, don't be too concerned about this. I mean, this is clearly explained by statistics. Here you have only a sample of 7 and 5, and here you have really huge amount of samples, and you're bound to have a very, very high one in such a statistical sort of basis of understanding. Okay, so but the whole point is that tuna mercury in tuna has been naturally high in the past. Okay, well, if tuna is not a good measure of mental health, so actually, by the way, I was being asked one time by somebody from National Wildlife Federation to ask about the mental state of some of this wildlife actually, and I just proclaimed that it's extremely difficult to do this sort of neuropsychological test. And here now we're talking about current situation. We're talking about state of Alaska. State of Alaska, as we know, depends highly, I mean, especially the Indians, I mean, the native, the Eskimos and Aleutian, they really depends a lot on fish as a source of protein and vitamins E and all that good stuff in fish. And because of all this federal advisory coming from the FDA and the EPA, people are really being scared a little bit away from this. But the state of Alaska got really, really worried about this, so they instituted a very active program, meaning that we just begin to monitor. Okay, for this specific case, they pick all the pregnant women from some 10 different counties, you know, all the native women, and measure the mercury level in the hair. Okay, the information can be obtained from hair or from blood. Okay, and look what the mean level is. It's of the order of 0.7, okay, median value of 0.5 or so. And then it so happened that there were some sample of hairs that one can get from old Aleutian mummies, and these are radiocarbon dated mummies that is of the order of 550 years old. Okay, and look at what their level is. This is clearly higher than what we have in the mean today. So, as you can see, 550 years ago, one do not even have any, or clearly don't have any SUV, so the explanation really, really has to be that it's natural. No, but the puzzling effect, the real difficult question to answer is that what is the state of mind of these mummies, of course, the infants and this. I mean, I would say that later I'll show you the epidemiological data. It's completely not clear at all that it's actually hurting, especially when they say, you know, children's brain are being damaged and have learning disability being attributed to their mother eating fish. I think that's really, really a stretch. And I'll show you why. Actually, it's not just talk. And I was very skeptical about doing this research itself, actually. But I was encouraged by several colleagues to try to look into this issue a little bit to see what is really behind this and whether there is any sense for us to worry about. But unfortunately, my conclusion is not so positive for the NGOs. So now let's move on to headline number 3. This one is actually invoking authority quite a bit. It's saying the National Academy of Science has stated that mercury in contaminated fish consumed by pregnant women will interfere with brain development in their babies. This is from Friend of the Earth, which is a very, very bad organization, I would say. Now, let's come back to the real data. We talk so much about metal mercury being a toxin, real toxic, okay? It's really little, actually. But those things that you can demonstrate is basically on a, it's not an epidemiological level, it's not even clinical level, it's basically only in some sort of, you know, trying to study about cell function, and one can really see how metal mercury can destroy or actually destroy cell function, cell division, for example, in very careful details. One have done that. No doubt that it is a neurotoxin, okay? But the problem is that from the real actual epidemiological data as a human system, this is actually, I have to absolutely assure you, and Jack Snyder, who is also an expert on this issue, is sitting at the back, can assure you that this is the best data they have to try to make the claim that children's brain are being damaged. This is a data coming specifically from the Faroe Island, which is a Danish-owned island somewhere off the North Atlantic. And here, let me explain what they did. By the way, the problem that they found is only neuropsychological. If it's about neurophysiological, like eyesight and eye acuity and all this hand movement and all that, the kids are actually doing really good. They're doing very, very well, and these are not reported at all. And we're talking about neuropsychological sort of measure, which is very non-standard. Jack will tell you that there is just no proper definition or even objective measure of these things. But here is one of the best attempts that they have tried. This is from Faroe Island, and they have done this test called the Q Boston naming test. Okay. By the way, for non-Q, they are not able to demonstrate this statistical correlation. Just for the Q one. And better score up here, lower score down here. And here is actually a measure of the mercury in the cord blood of the mother itself, okay? And just trying to assess, you know, what is the effect of this eating fish while the mother is pregnant on the fetal. Actually, they're not even talking about fetal. They're measuring the behavior of the children at 7 years old. And it's very curious why they don't do measurement at 6 months old and all that. For example, done by other study who hasn't found anything, okay? And here, let me just go back. Exactly that what it means by neuropsychological problem is basically that curve that they are helping you with. They are trying to tell you that this downward going tendency, meaning as you increase the exposure level, that you performing, the children tends to perform worse and worse. Okay? So they're performing the test for the children at 7 years old for about some 700 or 800 or so samples here, mother and children pairs, and then measure that and then saying that these data itself are indicating a clear neuropsychological problem for the children. I think that even for this data itself, I really hardly very convinced that this is really a very robust results. By the way, this data also have further problem because one do not have access to this data. For example, I would very, very much like to analyze what if I have more statistical outlier down out there. What would happen to the tendency? And we're not, we don't simply have access to such data. They say, well, it's Danish owned. But unfortunately, most of the study are being paid by NIH and all that. Here's a real problem with the Faroe Island study. Okay? This is the number one problem. The first problem is that the majority of the mercury that these pregnant women get, which means were exposed to their fetus, is actually not from eating fish. It's from eating, consuming pilot whale, as admitted by the chief physician of the Faroe Island hospital system. Okay? They are eating pilot whale product. Okay? They're not only eating, actually, by the way, here's a second one. So you all can see that they are actually admitting itself. This is actually printed in Boston Herald, that they are eating pilot whale meat. And they admit that fish are very good, right? The fish are very good for the children. And then the second problem is, oops. Oh, I lost one. I lost the second one, which actually is about the day admitting after the 2000 National Academy of Science report came out on metal mercury. That in 2001, they started to admit, oh, maybe we not only have problem with metal mercury, but our population, the Faroese, are actually being exposed to very, very high level of PCB itself. Not only PCB, you have other kind of toxin like DDT, actually, okay, found in this whale blubber. High concentration. And how high is the high that I'm talking about for PCB? It's actually 600 times what is allowed by the EPA standard. Okay, so here we are talking about a study. Okay, we're talking about adopting a study that is based on eating pilot whale meat that is have a host of chemicals. And whales, of course, being in the very high end of the food chain, contain extremely high concentration of metal mercury in its body. Okay, very high concentration in the liver, of course, which people in Japan also are eating that. That's up to, you know, if you say the average fish have about 0.1 ppm of mercury in it, the whale liver can have to up to 40,000 ppm. Okay, and the Japanese are eating it too. Okay, and the whale meat is of the order of 2 to 3 parts per million, and that's very, very high actually. And I'll go back to the Japanese data in a minute. And so as you can see, even the editorial or the cartoon that I just showed in the beginning requires some kind of correction. So you see that how much of the issue is really in some serious trouble. They are really talking about whale meat and other chemicals. They are not talking about fish here. Okay. Oh, we missed this one. This is the one that I was trying to show you, at least the direct admission that the study is being contaminated by PCB. So this is why the study is totally inappropriate to be used as a basis for deriving a safety level for metal mercury for exposure in the U.S. population, for example. I mean, if you all know about any U.S. Native that is eating actually pilot whale, do tell me, because I want to at least work a little bit more on this and try to understand whether their result could apply. Here's another very popular study being supported by National Academy of Science report. It's based on another study that is a lot lower in quality, in the sense that the sample is highly inhomogeneous. They have wide varieties of basically different races involved. And here's a study coming from New Zealand. It's the same kind of study, same kind of plot, basically, showing you the exposure level of mercury through their mothers, and then showing the children's sort of a neuropsychological test. One of them is language development, one is on performance IQ. And for this particular test, as you can see, they try to guide your eye with this downward turning being adverse behavior. But they have a real problem with this particular saw points. This data, this is real data, they have checked this repeatedly, they couldn't find any problem, and this turned out to be a Maori kid. A Maori children that is just normal. He's just doing everything as good as his peers in school and all that stuff. But his mother has this mercury level of 86 parts per million during pregnancy. Okay? And they try very, very hard to try to tell you that, oh, there is some downward turning. Okay? This is how bad in terms of really data manipulation. Of course, they will say that they will use some kind of sophisticated statistical methods to try to beat out all this. In fact, they even claim that they can take out the PCB effects, which is really not understood at all. How is it done? Okay? And it's just purely statistical junk in a lot of ways. And now let me come to a study that give me the conviction that why we don't really have a problem. And this is a really, really a very, very high quality study. If actually I study very little about medical literature, but this is sufficient for me to say that this study is of very, very high quality. This study is also, again, same kind of study like the one in Faroe and New Zealand. They are trying to assess actually the impact of potential exposure of metal mercury to fish while the mother is pregnant, eating fish while they're pregnant, and then the performance of the children later on. Here, this is a study done in Seychelles Island. And the reason why they choose Seychelles is because they eat more or less the wide varieties of ocean fish like U.S. And by the way, of course, this kind of study could never be performed in the U.S. itself because we have so many confounding factors. Okay, it can never be done. But by the way, it's going to be started because it's paid by trial lawyers. Actually, it's going to be done in one little study, but it's also done by the same group of people in Professor Philip Grungen from Faroe Island. They are trying to do a small study now in Mobile, Alabama, and you can expect the result to be very bad later. But anyway, let me not jump to the gun. Here's the study from Seychelles Islands, which I, for really pure scientific reason, they have traced the children. They're so high quality, they trace the children from birth to 9 years of age. They have did that 5 times, from 6 months, 19 months, 29 months, and then 66 months, and then 9 years. They have done that study so carefully, trying to document any systematic or adverse effects that they could find. Unfortunately, they cannot find any. They have done so far, actually, I even have some updated one for 12 years old. By the way, by the time it reached 12 years old, we're talking about not only the exposure through the mother womb, but actually through their own consumption already, okay? By the 12 years old, they have done up to 65 different neuropsychological tests. And they are not able to find, quote-unquote, adverse neurodevelopmental effects. Okay, and one of the tests, as you can see, the irony of the thing is that show beneficial effects from higher metal mercury exposure. The reason being, of course, it is the dominant good part of the fish that is overwhelming, because here they are showing that children of women with higher metal-mercury exposure is less likely to be hyperactive. Because the same statement where you interpret the amount of fish you eat as metal-mercury can be interpreted as just the positive effects of eating more fish. Okay? So that's the story. And then now let me come to our famous National Academy of Science. And I have to tell you that when you start reading things like this, you're really beginning to shake your head a little bit. I really don't understand. Because here, you know what National Academy of Science really do? Here's a statement. You can read it for yourself. I basically try to summarize for you that in existence, there are only three, basically okay sort of epidemiological study available to assess the neurodevelopmental effects of metal-mercury on children. And you have the Seychelles, you have the Faroe, and then you have the New Zealand. And then you can see what the committee says. The committee says that we should not derive an RFD, basically the safe, quote-unquote, safe level of metal-mercury exposure using a study from Seychelles. And why? Oh, simply they did not observe any effects. Okay? And then guess what they promote, right? They promote that study that I show you, the Faroe Island. And this is really beyond really any reasonable, even logic, actually. And so I'm having a little problem with that. But so really the whole problem is that we need to really question EPA very, very much on this particular issue. Now let me move on to headline number 4. And here's even more outrageous statement. Here is talking about 5 million American women of childbearing age. By the way, here really mean 5 million every year, okay? That is already have dangerous level of mercury in their bodies, okay? And then millions of all these coming from Physician for Social Responsibility, Jane Orion's favorite organization. Here's a real problem with them, okay? But let me first explain how they get that number first, all right? Let's go to this also complicated chart, but I think please bear with me because it's important to try to understand this. This study is actually based on data, actual data that is conducted for what you call the CDC Nutritional and Health Survey study, done for the first time, collected data in 1999 and 2000 period, and measure the amount of mercury in the blood of those women, 1,700 of them. And then here is just a cumulative distribution showing the value of the mercury in the blood, and then showing how many of them have 0.1 and then how many of them reach 20 or so. So the maximum amount is no more than 20. It's a little bit over 20. And then the part where you hear about 5 million or so many women having level above unsafe level is basically some 8% of these women that is above this tiny yellow line that I plotted here, okay, which is called they are above the EPA reference dose. This is the so-called EPA safe level of exposure, okay? And guess where the number came from? The number actually came from something like 58. This line is being plotted at 5.8 parts per billion, okay? So yeah, indeed, it's true. If it's according to this line, there is some 8% of the women above this, okay, above this level. But the actual level in which one can even consider to be any possibility of harm, meaning the level of concern, or actual level of harm, which actually has happened in history through poisoning cases. Have to remember, this is poisoning cases. This happened several times in Japan through industrial pollution, no doubt. Okay, dumping of all this directly produced metal-mercury rather than naturally produced that is controlled by so many other factors. This is chemical synthesis. Okay, in the lab, and of course, we all know that metal-mercury and even atom-mercury has a lot of industrial application, but they did that, and here's the actual documented cases of so-called Minamata disease, right? And the level of in which such thing occurs is of the order of 220 or so parts per billion. And then here's the level established by World Health Organization, so-called health level of concern. It's of the order of 80, and then even taking the very, very marginal data, it's of the order of 58. But EPA decided that no, that was not the level to consider. We have to be very, very safe. This is why I call this is the most extreme application of precautionary principle. They say, well, we have to account for all these different factors, different individuals, the most sensitive population for children. By the way, they already based on the data based on children itself. And then they say, oh, we have to do that. So they divided by 10. This whole argument took up some 60 pages in the National Research Council sort of report. But it's all meaningless, really, in a lot of ways. And I'll explain a little bit more. And it's real problematic. And of course, if you believe that that line should be the safety line, then of course, the statement that those guys are making are really true. And I will prove to you that this level is extreme, if not actually wow, you know, totally wow, and it's totally unscientific. So let me move on now. So I remind you now where the 5.8 is at according to the data. Look at all this adjustment. You are supposed to begin to see any particular level of concern, even not even at 58, but it's around here, okay? Of the order of 60, maybe a little bit more. And that's the level that one begins to worry. But how, and after all this manipulation, what you call social, political sort of criteria, they adjust this and move it at 5.8. And you can, and of course, nobody wants to look back into the data. If you put it at this level, it's totally ridiculous to say that, well, if I'm above this, we're in trouble now. This is why, even from their own data itself, the data is already problematic. Remember that this is from pilot whale and this is from PCB, okay? This is really not metalmercury alone. So even from that, we couldn't even make sense that if you're above this, that you're in trouble. Okay? So I hope you all see that. And here's another problem for them. There is even more data coming out. Okay? This is basically very, very latest results. And the data that I show you that have about 8% or so above the EPA safe level is basically the survey done in 99 and 2000. And look what happened in 2001 and 2002. For no particular reason, as Foragam like to say it, they dropped by half. Okay? This is just telling you that these are all statistical, meaningless sort of effects that you're seeing here. I wouldn't even want to go so far to try to say that now the number should be half, whatever the, if they say 5 million, I don't want to say that it's 2.5 million now because it's just meaningless. Okay? But this is to illustrate to you. By the way, of course, you don't see many newspapers reporting these things. Not at all. This is very well-known result now, by now, because this is available since November 2004. And here's a very, very good test. Okay, how extreme is the extremist this extreme things done by EPA? Okay, take the most recent survey done in Japan of the amount of mercury in the hair of this Japanese individual for some 9,000, very large sample, and look at what happened. If you were to consider the EPA safe level to be a measure of something, you would have 90% of the people, Japanese, have the level above this. For these particular results, I think you can only conclude two things. You either conclude all the Japanese are crazy, or, excuse me if there's any Japanese around, but no, I'm not a Japanese, but but then, or you have to conclude that actually the EPA's level references are meaningless and too extreme. Okay, this is the most extreme form of ultra precautionary principle. And then I want to point to another very important fact that is hidden from the public. By the way, this is well known before they even conduct that study that I told you by CDC, which is called the National Health and Nutritional Examination Survey. They have some sort of ethical guideline, no doubt. And guess what the guideline really recommend if we have the obligation to tell the participant? The level is at 200, just like the Minamata level. Okay. By the way, these are done in, you can do it in hair or in blood level. Let's just talk about blood for now. It's 200. Okay? It's not 58, it's not 80, it's not 5.8 clearly, it's 200. Okay? And this really tells you something very puzzling about what EPA's behavior is on this issue. And I can only say that I'm very confused, and therefore EPA's work is really low quality in science. And here's a little bit of maybe you call this rhetoric, but it's not. Just think about this very carefully. I tried to think about this, but I couldn't make any sense, so I tried to copy some of this statement from distinguished scientists around who actually care about the issue a little bit. When you are above this EPA reference dose, you're really not in trouble at all, okay? The point that is much better summarized by Tom Clarkson, which is actually what I would consider the most distinguished researcher in this particular topic itself. He is actually the first one to try to warn that there is a possibility of harm. And then when they conducted the study and found negative studies, I mean, he's been labeled a pariah. When he first promoted this issue, of course, he's the good guy. Okay, but he just said that the whole idea of safety factors is to protect people. You just cannot turn it around by saying that who is at risk, okay? If you're above it, you are really not in trouble at all. Okay, and I have an analogy here. The analogy may not be very good according to some people that we know, but no doubt that there is some gun, people want to have some kind of gun control law. And you want to be protective, okay? So you set up some kind of gun control law. But when the gun control law are found to be broken by a certain percent of abusers, it really don't mean that some of these people will have gunshot wound or death from them. This is really clear extrapolation, okay? They are confusing the issues of really precautionary sort of approach to set up some kind of a risk level versus the actual results, actually, the actual effects. And this is actually my final headline. I do have a few more things to say, but let me move on to this final line. And this fact is very, very clear. You see, the fact is cannot be disputed. This power plant mercury is poisoning America's children, and now they have very, very specific numbers. 630,000 babies born every year with this dangerous level of mercury in their blood. By the way, Jane, the Physician for Social Responsibility have a consensus statement on this. They even not only went so far to say that the only dangerous level of mercury in their blood, they make the actual leap of faith to say that now the children are born with damaged brain and learning disability. They directly connected that to a direct effect, just to make the issue a lot more alarming. So Physician for Social Responsibility actually have a statement, a consensus statement on this, signed by some 30 different NGOs, and I was surprised to see that those things exist. And this is basically the source of that particular outcry. They are being poisoned, you know, beautiful, very, very emotive, actually. And one could not help but really, really are very concerned about these things, okay? And it's really, really extreme in a lot of ways. But guess what can make you a little bit even more disturbed? There are actual data already in the NHANES survey. They are talking about this being harm. They are talking about hypothetical pregnancy. They are talking about hypothetical harm. They are talking about hypothetical everything. Well, they have the actual data measured for, mind you, the data sample is small, 700 children, 1 to 5, and one can see that actually they are doing quite well. But they won't tell you that. This data is actually available when they are making all these different statements. They just ignore it. Just simply ignore it because it's better to talk about all these hypothetical things that haven't happened yet, because it will be a lot more powerful and easier for their argument. Okay. And here is actually a statement that is also being ignored. Okay, about what is mean by risk above that level. And this is actually not the point is that I'm not using any authority, but I'm just trying to tell you that their own chairman of this National Research Council report on toxicological effects of metal mercury, I have a mistake here, it should be metal mercury, Robert Goyer, indeed tell us that the numbers should not be interpreted. So I think this Robert Goyer should tell it to Physicians for Social Responsibility. They should not be interpreted as the actual number of cases with these particular effects. They just do not believe you can do that right now. But these are totally ignored. But these are all in existence, and these are being said in about 2001 or so. Nobody bothers to actually check those things. And now, let me just make a quick summary of what we have heard. It is very clearly that in terms of the accounting of mercury and actually about the conversion of the mercury to metal mercury, which is the biologically toxic form, is that atmospheric deposition of mercury from power plant is a very, what I would say, even totally negligible source of to the huge pool of natural mercury available. And here, I haven't even begun to tell you about what is being done in geology, when people are trying to account for many things from the volcanic vent, the deep volcanic vents, and all these different sources. One of the direct person that did this work, by the name of Pat Rasmussen from Canada, actually did this work as her thesis work and published it in 1994. Nobody read the paper, and actually she almost lose her career on that, just publishing that one paper that is so actually well done, actually. It's the first attempt to try to systematically go for the accounting of the mercury in the geology and all this different system. But, you know, she's being treated as some sign of pariah. But the point is that the power plant itself is extremely negligible source compared to all these other natural sources in the world, ocean, land, and soil. And then remember that the production and destruction of metal mercury are controlled by environmental and ecosystem factors that are independent of the power plant emission. The other one you can be rest assured. Meaning that let's cut all the U.S. power plant emission. You will not see any effect, I can guarantee you, okay? Except you know that you're not emitting more. That's it. That's about it. So EPA actually could even agree with that. But they say, well, we want to regulate every single molecule. We want to reduce down to zero because they are using the example of lead. They're trying to say that we must have zero mercury emission, actually. This is the extreme that they're willing to go. But I think it's completely insensible, regardless of the cause. Now, conclusion for headline number two. Mercury concentration in tuna, as you can see, are not increasing rapidly, in fact, possibly declining. And then metamercury content in the ocean fish are naturally high in the past and has no relation to any power plant emission, U.S. or any other place that emitted these things. And then when we come to the National Academy of Science report, it's totally scientifically biased and inappropriately, as I would say, promoted the Faroe Island study while it's ignoring all this other good study, and then knowingly that Faroe Island is basically a study that is not a measure of metamercury, but is a measure of what I call a cocktail of toxic chemical, including metamercury, PCB, and DDT. Okay, and so therefore that study is totally inappropriate for fish eating population like the U.S. And then for headline number four. The real trouble of all this, actually, if you recognize, is actually the EPA reference dose, which really, really requires some kind of revision, if there is any possibility at all, is that this is totally subjective and is not supported by science at all, okay? Or even logical reasoning, as I show you. There is not a single woman in the U.S. actually have level that is above the level of what I call level of concern and actual level of harm, okay? Which I show you that is not even close. And then no babies clearly are being poisoned, according to this Friend of the Earth advertisement. Fish is, in fact, nutritious, have been found to be beneficial for mental development of children, okay, in contrast to this really flawed study from Faroe Island Children's Study. And then fish oil also has been known to reduce risk to preterm delivery and low birth weight. Oh, this one, I don't know why it jumped, but that's not important now. Let's not talk about this. But actually, if you want, here's the information. Here's the latest study funded by Teresa Heinz Foundation, okay? And it's basically a survey of what you call the Society of Environmental Journalists, SEJ. They done it in their annual meeting last year in Philadelphia, and they measured here the mercury concentration in their hair for some 260 members. And guess what they found? They found some 27% or so, or 70 of them, have level above this so-called EPA safe level, okay? So again, here, you either conclude that all these environmental journalists are unsound in their mind, so therefore don't trust anything they write, or you say that the EPA reference dose is very extreme. Okay? And mind you, the person that conducted this whole study, Professor John Spangler, who has won the Heinz Award for some actually quite a lot of money, Harvard School of Public Health, he has found his own hair level to be 3.4, three times higher than the EPA allowed level. So don't be confused by the blood level, which is 5.8 ppb. Here, the hair one is about 1 ppm. Okay, part per. It's a lot more concentrated in terms of the mercury in the hair than in blood. And here, he has three times larger, and guess what? He knows exactly that he has no problem. Okay, these are all the words. It's really, really a bit hypocritical in a lot of ways when they do this sort of thing. And oh, this study is not too well publicized by the environmentalists. They wish you never know this. Well, I'm glad somehow this thing got rearranged and appear here. Well, the summary here is a lot more clearer, actually, coming from this cartoon. You can see I let the three fish talk for themselves. These fish say that, wow, the mercury myth has really taken on a life of its own. Hey, man, don't complain. If the truth come out, they will start eating us again. This little guy say, eat meat, okay? Well, I'm not finished yet. By the way, you're supposed to finish this, but if I still have time, I want to go on. And here is one of my very proud achievement, meaning I was able to find this picture. And because people are worried about high concentration of mercury in Northern Pike, and here we have our most distinguished citizen of the U.S. And they are with their brothers, they are catching Northern Pikes and some muskies, and they're clearly smiling. Okay? Do I still have time? 5 minutes, then I think I should go on because I do have more information. So really, the bottom line is, what's the big deal? Let's go towards zero mercury. And I can assure you the bottom line is that you can't. Okay? And then I'm really concerned in terms of this aspect of actually huge potential for public health crisis in U.S., really. Okay? And I'll give you the reason from extreme precaution of the type that EPA like to promote. Here's a clear message from, again, don't mind me for quoting some sort of authority, Professor Eric Rim from Harvard School of Public Health, a different kind of scientist from, let's say, John Spangler or all these others. And they're clearly pointing to these people being scared away from eating fish. Okay, and we all know the fish is good for the heart. Okay, and I'll show you here. His statement is very clear. Okay, but let's just review what actually the American Heart Association are saying. What is good about omega-3 fatty acids? Look at this host of very, very really useful physiological function. Okay, decreased risk for arrhythmia, reduced risk for thrombosis, which is clotting of blood, and then decreased triglyceride, the bad things in the blood fat in your thing, improve the cell wall function, and then lower even the blood pressure a little bit, good or bad, that will be depends, and then reduce inflammatory responses. Okay, these are well-known physiological function of omega-3 fatty acids. And here's one of the reasons why U.S. could potentially be harmed by this sort of alarmist situation. Look at the current average U.S. intake of fatty acids, the good fatty acids, the EPA, by strange coincidence, DHA and EPA, this is the specific type of fatty acids, omega-3 polyunsaturated acids, that we are only consuming 100 to 200 grams per day. Whereas the average recommendation by NIH on some NATO workshop is actually so much more, 6 times or 8 times more than what we are eating here. So let's compare ourselves with other population. Look at what the Japanese are doing, what the Danish are doing, Singaporean, Norway, Spain, and then of course the very famous things about the Eskimos. This is the beginning of the discovery of why the Eskimos seems to not have any heart disease, actually. When the time, just about the time when people know how to synthesize and know how to identify this omega, specific chemical form of omega fatty acids in the 50s or so. 40s, actually, a little bit earlier than that. So U.S. are actually at risk because we are already taking less. And then if we are concerned about it, think about the possible effects that we are really taking even less, whereas we know that we're supposed to take a little bit more. And here's just a host, not to insult your senses, but really to tell you that there are some clear documented cases. Oh, here's a case that indeed you should apply the precautionary principle. Because you know that there is possible benefits of taking that fatty acids from fish. You know, it is exactly the kind of problem that they worry about for children and actually pregnant women. Postpartum depression, for example, can be demonstrated to be decreased if you take a little bit more fish. And then even all this host of disease like breast cancer, prostate cancer, kidney disorder, people on kidney dialysis were shown that if you want to have high dosage of this polyunsaturated acids, they will improve, the chances of death is a lot lower. Alzheimer's disease, rheumatoid arthritis, type 2 diabetes itself, okay? And this one we can skip. This is just a statement from a gynecologist, nevertheless a very, very distinguished doctors here, who actually worries about this sort of alarming situation that he's talking about, all the pregnant women and the children itself will be missing out all the good stuff from the fish if we are scared away from eating fish. Because the point is that they're trying to say even one molecule of this mercury can harm you. So that's the whole basis that is becoming so extreme. And here is just a quick evidence to show you the just focus on this chart here showing for different country amount of seafood they consume and then the rate, the prevalence rate of the postpartum depression. Look at the people who have very low postpartum depression. It's basically Japanese, Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, and then people that have high postpartum depression rate is actually in all those countries who take in a little bit less of fish. And then if you ask yourself, do we have any documented evidence that this thing are actually at work now? And here's a situation for a not so large group. Let's just focus on the top panel here. What it's showing you is actually time over here from April 99 to about January of 02 or so. Or I cannot read that, but about January of 02. It's talking about pregnant women in Cambridge, Massachusetts, about their behavior of consuming fish. They basically have a tendency of more or less flat or slightly increasing over this period. But then this is the period in which that the FDA sort of advisory first came out, okay, about telling pregnant women you should avoid this, avoid that. And look at what happened after that. So indeed that is not just talk. People, pregnant women in Cambridge are indeed actually sort of worried about these things. And mind you, they are a lot more highly educated, so they are following this sort of trend. But the real question for me is really at what cost? Okay, as you can see that the fish oil is really good for the children's mental development itself. And then not only that, it's for the pregnant woman itself. And with that, I think I better stop since I almost ran out of time. Thank you.